you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Our friend is back, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco School of Medicine and Medical Center, where he's infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at UCSF. Dr. Chin Hong, a very good day to you. Thank you for joining us again.
My absolute pleasure, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
We have a doubling of the number of COVID-19 cases in Los Angeles County since Governor Newsom implemented the full return to normal pattern here. Now, that's a doubling from low levels of COVID-19, but our director of public health, Dr. Ferreira, has expressed some concern about this. How concerned are you over the increase in cases?
Well, at this point, Larry, I'm not terribly concerned. I think many of us expected that there would be an increase in cases after people started moving around more. So it's expected in some sense. I think, you know, we need to continue to keep our eyes on these numbers. It's still very, very markedly lower than a winter surge. Just put things in perspective. During the winter, we had about 15,000 cases a day. So even though it's a doubling of cases from about 200 to 400 cases per day, it's still very markedly different. And what's most important is that we haven't had a run in hospitals and we haven't had a run on ICU beds. So I think that's kind of holding tight.
Let me put this in a way that I know will disturb public health advocates, but just to sort of be blunt, if we don't see appreciably more people get vaccinated, that this is close to kind of where we're going to land, and that the people who've decided not to get vaccinated, they've made their decision. What do you think is in the offing?
Well, I think that many people are worried that there would be, you know, people have been talking about two Americas, the people who are vaccinated and the people who are not. I think many people are worried about Delta coming in, and that's potentially going to fuel another mini surge. I wouldn't call it a surge, really, or regional outbreaks, particularly in poorly vaccinated communities. Also, I think right now California is kind of in a lull period, not only because of vaccinations, but because of natural immunity from a huge winter surge. So I think it may be almost too good to be true. And there is some talk that Delta may be less forgiving for natural immunity, and people who are not vaccinated, who got COVID before, may not be as protected against Delta. But time will tell, and we'll see. But to your point, Larry, there is going to be a group of people in the community who will never get vaccinated, no matter what. You can give them $1 million. You can give them, tickets to the LA Lakers season pass, and they still won't get vaccinated.
Well, that might do it. I don't know, the Lakers season pass. A million, I agree. But Dr. Peter Chin Hong joining us on Air Talk. With the natural immunity, which is providing some degree of protection for people who are unvaccinated but who had COVID-19, is it thought that that immunity conveyed by having had COVID is likely to diminish earlier than those who were vaccinated?
That's a great question. I think it's still going to be seen, but we have some evidence from the laboratory setting that people with natural immunity have archived immune cells in their bone marrow, even if when you check their antibodies on the outside, on their blood, it looks lower. So that's promising, but it's not everyone. So I think my take-home point from those studies is that although it may last a while, 8 months at least in that study, and possibly 12 months or longer, we don't know who's going to have the immunity and who's going to not have the immunity, because in the same study, there were some people who got infected naturally who didn't have any archived immune cells in their bone marrow.
We have the CDC citing recent studies showing that vaccinated people who become infected with COVID-19 carry less of the virus. Can you elaborate on that and explain what that means, less of the virus? And are these people who we would consider to have breakthrough cases, or just that they were exposed to it and are asymptomatic?
Yeah, so I think it was very promising news and validating, I think, what a lot of people were hypothesizing, meaning that when you got vaccinated, certainly there is a chance that you would get you could get infected again. But the people who got infected, say like in Israel and the UK, and some in the US now, we've been seeing from CDC data, they don't seem to be very, very sick. In fact, it kind of just seems like a cold. In fact, the CDC stopped checking the general community for people who were infected after they got their vaccines and just focused on hospitalizations and deaths instead. So what's happening is as follows. So coming back to the study everyone knows now, the Pfizer and Moderna studies showing that there was 95% protection against infection, meaning that there were 5% of people who could still get infected. And some people think that even though the door could be open, meaning the virus can still get in those 5% of people, there is some immune response in those individuals who kind of keep the virus in check, even if the virus can get in the door. And what it's, so the immune system is saying, kicking out some of those viruses, and the little that remains is not as much in a long shot compared to natural infection. In fact, when you look at that CDC study and they follow, this is a healthcare worker study of about 4,000 healthcare workers, 200 of them became infected. The people who got vaccinated had about 40% less virus and they got better quicker. And what it means on a real sense is that they will not, you know, there's less virus to make the body angry and cause inflammation, but there's also less virus to then transmit to other people.
And is there a sort of clear correlation that more amount of virus means a sicker person?
Yes, and we've seen that over and over again in other infectious diseases. Take HIV, for example. I think many people know about HIV, and we may check something called a viral load in HIV individuals. We know that when you have a higher viral load in HIV or even hepatitis C, you're going to get sicker faster. You're going to get so basically it's like the train is moving fast to get to the cliff. So if you have a lower viral load, it takes longer for you to really get sick if you get sick at all. So it really does correlate with intensity of infection, but also transmissibility. If you have less virus floating around, you're less likely to be able to spread that infection. In fact, wearing masks also takes advantage of that theory, because even if somebody is spewing virus next to you, when you have the mask, it prevents a large amount of virus coming into you, even if you're at close range. So that lower virus exposure or viral load also reduces the probability of even getting infected in the first place.
We'll continue with UC San Francisco infectious disease specialist Dr. Peter Chin Hong, who's been a part of our KPCC Air Talk family now for 16 months, joining us weekly and giving a great deal of his time to provide his expertise. And take your questions at 866-893-5722. We'll be away only 60 seconds, then back with more with Dr. Peter Chin Hong. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. Coming up, we'll talk about two big U.S. Supreme Court cases, their final decisions to be announced of the just completed term. We'll talk about them, one a California case, the other with significant implications for voting laws. It comes from Arizona. That's coming up a little bit later. But right now, UC San Francisco infectious disease expert and professor of medicine at UCSF, Dr. Peter Chin-Hong, to take your questions at 866-893-KPCC. Tweet at AirTalk or post on the AirTalk Facebook page. As we've talked over these many months, Dr. Chin-Hong, there are many different clinical trials of vaccines that are going on. One of them from a company, CureVac, its final trial shows that its vaccine far less effective than the others. When you've got a vaccine like that that comparatively underperforms, does that mean it's unlikely to get emergency use authorization, even if, you know, back in the early days of the pandemic, you might be happy for the degree of efficacy of the CureVac vaccine?
Exactly. So CureVac, just to give everyone background who's listening, is a German biotech company. And the reason why this is big news is that the European Union hasn't had as much access to vaccines, even compared to the United States. Even though BioNTech is a, you know, a German company as well. So CureVac was touted to be sort of like the answer to that vaccine shortage in Europe. And they had promised something like, you know, 285 million doses to the EU. But so now with this 48% efficacy in the studies, where they looked at 40,000 people, kind of like a similar study like the other vaccine trials we've seen, it is very disappointing. And I think people are not excited about it, but the company's still moving on with additional studies. In the U.S., it would not pass a bar for FDA EUA because we had set a bar of 50%. So, and like you said, Larry, we have plenty of amazing vaccines right now in our Operation Warp Speed arsenal. So CureVac, even if it goes ahead with more production, at least in the U.S., doesn't look very good.
Meanwhile, Novavax claims its overall efficacy for its vaccine at just about 90%.
Yes, so Novavax, I really love this vaccine. It probably won't, in practical terms, add to the three vaccines we have now in widespread use in the U.S., of course, mainly Pfizer and Moderna and some J&J. The reason why is because, you know, there are plenty of those supplies. But the reason why Novavax is important, first of all, it's kind of a cool technology. It's like the HPV vaccine. It's not live. And it's really interesting sort of like technology using like some plants and things to generate virus-like particles and then auto-assemble into something that looks like a spike protein to the body. So Novavax, people think, will be great as a potential booster shot in the future just because of the way it's manufactured. So if we ever need or see a crazy new variant, maybe it will be called Zeta or something like that by the end of the Greek alphabet.
Let's hope we don't get that far.
I know, seriously. Then people are thinking that it could be a nice kind of a vaccine for boost. And of course, you don't need to get, even if you hadn't gotten Novavax as the original vaccine, many people think that it doesn't matter what vaccine you need if we ever get to the point of needing a booster. But Novavax, with its millions and millions of production, of course, it's an American company from Maryland, would be part of the U.S. donation to the rest of the world.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Chin-Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center. We've had a lot of questions from listeners who've gotten the one-shot J&J vaccine, wondering with the Delta variant becoming more and more present across the country as well as here in Southern California, whether they should consider getting an additional shot of mRNA vaccine or whether they should look to a booster perhaps from J&J down the road. What do you think?
So for right now, the official party line is no, and I'll tell you the reason behind that thinking, meaning no, that people don't need to worry about getting a booster shot yet. So what we know so far is that in terms of the Delta variant, they studied Pfizer in the UK, that was the original study, showing that get an AstraZeneca, if you got one dose of Pfizer or AstraZeneca, you'd have 33% protection. If you got two doses of Pfizer, you're up to 88% protection against Delta and about 60% protection against AstraZeneca from AstraZeneca against Delta. So where does J&J fit into that? Well, J&J wasn't very used in the UK or in places where they studied the Delta variant. And of course, in the US, we didn't have that much Delta yet. So we couldn't really study it that well. But J&J has performed much better than AstraZeneca in the original trials. About 70% efficacy in all comers. And that was at a worse time in terms of variant circulating than the Pfizer and Moderna studies were. So many people think that J&J is actually a better vaccine than AstraZeneca. In fact, AstraZeneca has been stalled at the FDA for who knows how long because, their clinical data is more variable. In fact, South Africa didn't want any AstraZeneca, if you remember, because it didn't look very good against their variants at the time. So my thought is that even though we don't have enough J&J data yet, that because it performed better than AstraZeneca in the trials, and AstraZeneca did decently when you got two shots against Delta, that one shot of J&J equals to two shots of AstraZeneca, which is probably even better than AstraZeneca, would lead to a little bit more protection than 60% in infection. Again, we think that most of these vaccines will prevent against serious disease and hospitalizations regardless. But with all that said, I know a lot of people are nervous and, I don't think the vaccine would be harmful if people are nervous, but I can't give an official recommendation just because we don't have the science yet.
Sure. Sure. Makes sense. Dr. Peter Chin Ong with us on Air Talk. We have Jen in Culver City who is having a couple dozen people over for a July 4th party. They're all vaccinated. She wonders if it's okay to have them inside without masks given they're all vaccinated. I don't know why that would be any more dangerous than 24 people sitting in a restaurant having dinner in there. You'd probably have mixed vaccinated and unvaccinated. Dr. Chin Hong, what do you think?
I think given the numbers right now, it's completely safe to be having a gathering of all unvaccinated people indoors, eating and enjoying the time together.
All right. Jen, have a great time with your 4th of July party, 866-893-KPECC. Speaking of the Independence Day weekend, Dr. Chin Hong, do you have any suggestions or thoughts, anything people should do as COVID-19 precautions if they're traveling, if they're going to barbecues, if they're going to, say, the Rose Bowl, 4th of July outdoor fireworks show, or you feel like the numbers are low enough, people can just act like things are typical?
Yeah, it's certainly a different time right now, and I'll could sort of like direct my comments to two groups, vaccinated and unvaccinated. So vaccinated folks, I think in general, it's going to be very safe indoors or outdoors, given where we are now in California. Unvaccinated folks, generally safe outdoors, given that we have very, very low levels of virus in the community in general. But in indoors, it's variable depending on, who you're going to visit. We still have, a fair amount of cases in the states, so you're not going to be immune, particularly if you have visitors coming in from areas where there are a lot more cases, simply because we don't do screening at California borders. But if people travel, it depends on where you're traveling to. If you're traveling to a community with low vaccination rates and a lot of visitors, it may be riskier, even if you're vaccinated, to go in an indoor setting where you don't know the vaccine status of a lot of people. And I'm not saying it's riskier because you're going to get super sick and go to the hospital and die. I'm saying that you may get infected. And just getting infected is just going to be kind of a bummer because then you may want to go and get tested. You'll have like anxiety over it. So to prevent all of that, if you're traveling and you are going to be in a group, particularly indoors with a bunch of people you don't know about, just wear your mask to be safe.
All right. Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco, joining us on Air Talk. We also had a question from Peter in Pasadena, wondering if Los Angeles County's recommendation that everyone wear masks indoors, vaccinated or not, should be made an actual requirement.
That's a great question from Peter. I think what will happen is, you know, these cases will continue to rise a little bit, hopefully not too much. If it, maintains a sort of steady state, like you postulated, Larry, and the authorities are happy with that, and it's not going to go up and up, because beyond a certain point, it doesn't go up linearly, it goes up exponentially. And I think LA Public Health decided to make this recommendation, I think, for two reasons. One is they wanted to protect unvaccinated people, but I think most of all, they just wanted businesses to conduct themselves as usual and not sort of like have more cases necessarily. Although, you know, this recommendation wasn't picked up by San Diego or San Francisco or any other county.
Or the state as a whole, yeah.
Yeah, or the state as a whole. So I think it was just very precautionary. So if everything stays pretty decent, and particularly, I don't think we're going to see increasing hospitalizations or deaths anymore, I think it will not turn into mandate. However, if infections go up and continue to go up across the state, which it probably will, there'll be some threshold where people will start feeling nervous. They'll put on a mandate maybe, and then realize there won't be hospitalizations and death. And that gets to the point where, you know, we're going to be living with people getting infected. If they don't die and go to the hospital, I think we will settle down to where we are with influenza.
Dr. Chin Hong, thank you so much. As always, have a terrific Independence Day weekend. Hopefully you have a fun time planned with your family, and we look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thanks so much, Larry. Always a joy.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong, professor of medicine, infectious disease specialist, UC San Francisco Medical Center, and of course, professor of the School of Medicine as well. Coming up on Air Talk 2, very big and final for this term, Supreme Court decisions. We'll talk about the implications when it comes to voting laws and campaign contributions from major donors. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.